It's All Journalism. My name is Michael O'Connell, and I'm here today with Joshua Hatch of the Online News Association. It's been a little over a year since we had Josh in last. Back then he talked about data visualizations and the work he was doing as senior editor of data and interactives at the Chronicle of Higher Education. So welcome, Josh. I'm glad to have you back here.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me.
That's okay. Josh has actually been one of our big behind-the-scenes supporters of the podcast. He's cued us into some people we should talk to and some interesting topics that we should talk about. And generally offered our support. So when he called a couple of days ago and said, you know, hey, would you want, you know, maybe we can talk about the Online News Association conference and the Online Journalism Awards that are going to be presented at the conference, I said, sure, of course, because, you know, we like Josh and this is an interesting topic. And people are doing very innovative stuff right now in journalism, and they should be recognized for it. So anyway, tell us about the awards, Josh.
Tell me everything. So so the Online News Awards, they started in 2000. ONA was formed in 1999. And so this will be the 14th year of the OJAs, of the awards. And this year we have, it's over 20 awards with over $52,000 in prize money.
Yeah.
So, you know, not too shabby.
Not too shabby.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good reason to. Money, you know, journalists quite often don't think about money, but prize money is, and if you're doing good work, you should be recognized for it anyway. So.
Well, and that's just it. I think that over the past 14 years, the OJAs have become, I mean, obviously this is, you know, I'm biased maybe, cause I help run them now, but, has become one of the big awards in digital journalism. And so I think, you know, there's the prize money, which is great. But there's also, I think, just the honor of being recognized by your peers. And so, you know, we want a lot of people to apply, to enter and show us the good work that's being done.
So how long have you been involved with ONA?
Well, with ONA in particular, I've been involved. I guess I went to my first conference in 2005, I want to say. And then I went to that conference and I thought this is an organization that I want to be a part of and help shape. And so I was involved in putting together and running the conferences through, I think, 2010. And then I ran for the board and I've been on the board since then. And on the board, I have a couple different roles. I'm currently the treasurer. I run the OJAs, and I also chair our legal committee, our legal affairs committee. We do a lot of work there around – we did a lot of work around helping to stop SOPA and PIPA when that was in Congress. So that was the Stop Online Piracy Act and Protect Intellectual Property Act. We did a lot of work this past year on the Free Flow of Information Act in the Senate, or the SHIELD law, and helping to get that passed. And not just helping to get it passed, but helping to shape it so that it is – broad enough that it protects digital journalism. We have some great industry colleagues and you know, organizations like the Alternative News Weeklies and like the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press and ASNE, the American Society of News Editors. But a lot of them represent, you know, more legacy, more traditional outlets in journalism. And so in particular with the Free Flow of Information Act or the SHIELD law, we really work to make sure that it was broad enough to protect a blogger or to protect journalism that is being transmitted not just through print and broadcast, and not just through digital, but through technologies not even invented yet. So that we didn't, as a lawyer we work closely with put it, I don't want to create a SHIELD law that inadvertently carves out protections for my granddaughter when she's a journalist. And so anyway, so have that role as well. And
But
doing a lot.
So anyway, I guess the point of me asking that question was to say that you've sort of been involved with the organization for a while. You've sort of seen the way the awards have progressed.
Yeah.
What is new this year? What is different than has been in the past?
Yeah. So I'll answer that in two ways. Broadly, the awards, they've almost kind of come back to a place where they started. When they first came out in 2000, they tended to be fairly broad. And so there's a General Excellence Award, which there always has been, but there was also, more almost traditional categories like Best Feature and Breaking News and things like that. over the years, as new technologies and new ways of telling stories online developed, up sprang more narrow specific awards like best online video and best use of community. And over the last couple of years, we've actually kind of gone back a little bit to the beginning as we've recognized that carving out specific media was preventing certain types of work that we think is really important from being honored. The things that are more, more where you're bringing together, you're weaving together multiple media. So if you take a look at, some projects, some of the big projects that have gotten a lot of attention, like The Guardian's Firestorm or Snowfall or some of those multimedia narratives.
Snowfall again. We keep talking about it. Go on.
Well, I'm going to talk about it a different way,
okay,
which is that in prior years, an entry like that I think would have had a harder time in the OJAs because, well, is it the best video? Not really. Is it the best community engagement? No. But is it the best at synthesizing all of this stuff together? And in that way, it does represent the type of work that digital journalism does that, you know, radio or TV or print can't ever do. So we've gone back to having these categories that allow for more synthesis of digital storytelling. And then specifically what's changed this year, we have a couple of specific categories that are new. They include, I'm actually going to look them up here because I want to make sure I get them right. So they include a new award funded by the University of Florida that is on data journalism. And so it's not simply sort of traditional car reporting, and it's not simply data visualization, but it's really the best use of data in storytelling. And so it brings together all of that. We have another award that is innovative use of visual storytelling. So again, it's not trying to say it has to be the best slideshow or the best video, but just the most innovative, most creative, most impactful visual storytelling. And you can think about things like the way that the NSA decoded, for example, took it into a new direction, or also from The Guardian, the America Elect, right? That was, if you remember, that was sort of that cartoon book scrolling feature.
Right.
And that was a really innovative way of storytelling through a visual means. And there are many, many others. I'm not just trying to pick two Guardian ones. They're just top of mind at the moment. And then we also have shifted some awards around a little bit. So we have an investigative watchdog award from Gannett Foundation. I think it's the Al Newhart Investigative Award. And making a few changes and tweaks to the categories. So, for example, if you look at, we have a technical innovation award. Last year, the winner was D3.js, which, talk about a geeky winner, right? A JavaScript library won an award in a journalism conference, which is kind of cool. Well, we've expanded that award a little bit so that things like a new CMS, right, that is empowering a website in a totally new way that gives digital journalists new avenues to reach and contact and work with the community. That's something that might do well.
Well, you know, you say this, and it sounds like a lot of the things that you're talking about with those specific awards is that these are kind of big technical, kind of almost geeky types things. And if I'm an online journalist who's doing a pretty good job of covering my community or something, I might say, well, I'm not doing all this, you know, these bells and whistles stuff. I'm just using the tools that I have to tell the news. I mean, is there a place for me to enter in something like that?
Absolutely. So we still have it is the Online Journalism Award. So it's still, there's still a breaking news category. There's a feature category. There's opinion and commentary. There's one called topical reporting, which is basically beat reporting. And who is doing the best beat reporting online? And so the idea there is that I think what judges look for are things that can be done, ways that journalists are taking advantage of the medium, of the platform or platforms, mm-hmm. right? So is this reporting that's just print reporting put online? That's probably not going to, you know, win the judge's favor the way that Ezra Klein won last year for online commentary because of the way that they took advantage of the platform to do their storytelling, to do their reporting, to do their journalism. So it really is a merger of the two, but it's not just, you know, who's the geekiest, who's the most technical. Mm-hmm. It's who's taking advantage of the platform.
It's interesting because, I mean, these are the online journalism awards, so they should reflect the platforms that they're on. But they're also journalism awards, so they should,
absolutely,
you know, the things that we all do and the ethics and the skills that we apply to our job, you know, when they're done in excellence and, you know, contribute to, you know, public service and things like that. I mean, those are things that need to be recognized as well.
That's exactly right. And you know, again, looking at past winners, you know, La Nación won some awards last year, part of the, you know, La Nación doesn't have the resources of the New York Times, for example, right? But they are doing phenomenal journalism, and they're making the best of the platform in the way that they can. And I think judges recognize that they are, you know, in Argentina, they don't have the FOIA laws that we have in the United States, which, you know, even here we wish they were better. But in Argentina, they wish they just had them at all. And so the judges recognize, like, you guys are doing phenomenal journalism, and you're really taking smart advantage of the web. They're using Tableau and Google Docs and other stuff. So it's not like they've got their own, you know, JavaScript library that they've invented and like the New York Times, but they're doing great journalism on that platform. So it's definitely, you know, it is the online journalism awards.
Okay. Now, and this is going to be at the conference. This is going to be in September. What can you tell us about the conference at this point?
Yeah, so the award ceremony is at the conference in Chicago, September 27th. I think the conference runs from the 25th to the 27th in Chicago. I'll get to more on the conference in 1 second, but I want to be clear that the deadline to enter.
Okay, we're going to get around to that. Yeah.
But, okay.
Now, well, let's since you broached the subject,
I just want to make clear.
You're so pushy.
Deadline to enter is June 13th, entries are open to any language. Anybody around the world, we love international. I can talk more about that. But then judging will commence through the summer. And then the awards ceremony is Saturday, September 27th at the conference. It closes at the conference.
Okay.
It's a really fun time, actually. There's a big banquet and people get rowdy, and it's a fun time.
It's our Oscars, I guess. Okay, Golden Globes at least.
Right, exactly.
As much as that. Well, is there going to be red carpet? There needs to be red carpet. This is the year we need to have a red carpet.
All right, okay. Do we really want journalists walking down a red carpet? I'm not sure.
Well, if you believe all of the hype around the correspondence dinner, then yes, I think they want that.
We
need more celebrities, I guess. But journalists are celebrities as well.
We'll consider it.
That's me, you know, my crass. Anyway, back to the matter at hand. So the conference itself is going to be in September, and it's, you know, it's not just the awards, but it's, you know, seminars, an opportunity to interact with other, you know, online journalists.
Yeah.
A great place to pick up interesting information in the hallways, just talking to people and just seeing the way they're doing their jobs.
Yeah. So the conference, and as we're recording this on June 4th, I believe.
Way to destroy the illusion here, but go on.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's
well, you can edit that out.
Okay.
So as we're recording this, the programming for the conference, the first sort of reveal of the programming will happen within the next day or so. And yeah, what I would say, the conference is broken up in a couple of key parts. There is obviously there are exhibitors who come and are interested in talking to journalists about, you know, products and ways that they can make their lives easier, both from a grand newsroom scale down to a specific equipment that journalists might want to use, and digital recorders and cameras and things like that. There is what we call the midway, which is a little bit more of a hands-on place where you can go and maybe sit and talk to some Google developers about how to use some of their tools. Last year, and I think probably this year, there was a great group called Spark Fun that you could actually build little electronics. And you might think, well, what does that have to do with journalism? John Keefe, who you've talked to at WNYC, used their kits to build their cicada tracker tool, and where people were able to measure the temperature of the ground to figure out when the cicadas would come out. And I think they're doing something with sleep tracking in their kits now, too. So that was really, really cool. Uh-huh. And there's a lot of other – you could talk to you know, people from the Knife Foundation. So it's more of a kind of a hands-on area. And then we have some main keynote addresses. I don't think they've been announced. In fact, I know they haven't been announced yet for this year. But last year, for example, we had Nate Silver. And then we have a whole slew of sessions that go everything from hands-on, here's how to use Mapbox and TileMill, to more sort of thinky sessions, law and policy, better understanding copyright, understanding what usage rights some journalist has or doesn't have. There was a session on computer security. Especially in the wake of the revelations, how do you make sure your laptop is secure?
Hey, well, first of all, it's not probably, but
yeah, turn it off.
throw it in the dumpster.
and everything in between. You know, how to use MailChimp or other email services to increase newsletter engagement. Why and how to make your sites responsive and the thought process behind that. So many, many sessions. And business as well. You know, how to be a better newsroom manager, how to manage change in your newsroom, mm-hmm. which I'm sure most are trying to do right now.
Yeah, it's amazing. That conversation just never seems to end. It goes on and on and on, which is probably a good thing for a lot of newsrooms and a lot of journalists to be thinking of the business and the technical side of their jobs and not just, you know, where my source is and how to write a story. So why should people submit to the awards?
Why or when?
Why?
Why? Well, I think people should submit for the awards for a couple of reasons. I mean, one is put your best foot forward. Get an opportunity to have your work seen by your peers and get feedback from them. You know, win an award. Maybe win some money. I should say that not every category has a cash prize associated with it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, I don't think that journalism should be driven by awards by any stretch, but that said, it's still nice, and you know, it's nice on a personal level. And I think it's encouragement that you get. It's not just if you win, but you might be. We also identify the finalists, and I think that it helps your peers see your work. It gives your work another opportunity to be seen. I mean, you joked about the Oscars, but when a movie wins the Oscar, it has another bounce in sales, and sometimes gets re-released in theaters. A lot of times, entries in OJAs will see a traffic spike as people come upon it, you know, again for the first time. You reach new people who are now seeing it. You know, I think it's just. Especially if you go to our site, awards.journalist.org, and you go back over the years, you also see you see some really interesting progressions in the work. And you definitely see the rise and fall of Flash. You definitely see certain constants, the really good journalism, the impact that the journalism has. You see a really interesting change in who is winning the awards, and a lot of motion. And you know, there are places that have won awards in previous years that didn't exist a couple of years ago. There are people who win awards who just got into journalism, and they're bringing in a fresh perspective and a new idea. Iran Election Watch last year, for example, was a couple of, I think it was just three or maybe four people who put that together, and they won in the small category. You know, they might have said, well, we're tiny. Why should we enter? Well, you should enter because your work is good and your work should be seen and your work is inspiring other people and you might win. And they did win. Mm-hmm. And I think that that gave them a boost and a confidence to move on, to do more and to get other people's attention. You know, Homicide Watch DC won the Knight Public Service Award a couple of years ago. And, you know, they already were, I think, building a bit of a name for themselves, but I think that just propelled them into a new place. And then Laura Amico won the Harvard Nieman Fellowship, and you know, they're starting new projects. And you know, I don't want to say the Online Journalism Awards is what propelled them to
success. It opens doors, ladies and gentlemen.
I mean, certainly they make their own success, but I do think that it helps. It definitely helps bring attention.
I see that. It definitely, if you do go back and look over the names and the projects, it sort of gives you this idea of the way things have sort of changed and that there's innovation and excellence on all different levels. It's not just the big, you know, the New York Times Snowfall type thing, but it's a lot of, you know, small newsrooms, new newsrooms doing work that has a really huge impact on the direction that we're going in digital. So, recognizing those people it's nice for them, but it also is good for the industry because then we get to see, you know, if you're doing something really innovative and different that the way that you're covering your courthouse or whatever, you know, go ahead and take a shot and submit it. As you said, you might see more traffic, you might win an award, but you're getting what you're doing out there, which helps all of us in a way.
Absolutely. And you touched on something I want to make sure to clarify for people. You might be a small shop. It doesn't mean you're going up against the New York Times.
Yeah.
So we do recognize that the New York Times, even despite their... despite their really terrific, maybe a little bit overly self-critical innovation report. not really self-critical, but
mea culpa.
It did the industry a real service, even though I don't think that was their intent.
Because they didn't release it.
Yeah, it wasn't meant for public. But that's I think it did the industry a real service to get that insight. But they still do have 425 developers, they have more developers than the Chronicle has people. And so you might think, well, how can the Chronicle, you know, possibly
as fine a publication as that is, compete?
How can it possibly compete against the New York Times? Well, the reality is that it doesn't. We recognize this, and so we break most of these categories up into small, medium, and large. It's been a challenge to figure out what that means. Originally had to do with the number of page views that the organizations got, but that really wasn't a very good proxy for what we were trying to get at, which is resources. And so over time, there's been evolution in how we've defined small, medium, and large. And this year, it's basically the overall size of the organization. So I believe that 50 or fewer employees overall for the organization is small, 50 to 250 is medium, and more than 250 is large. And so, you know, it does allow a Iran Election Watch or Homicide DC or, you know, others that aren't top of mind at the moment to be weighed against its peers and puts the New York Times and USA Today and LA Times and, you know, CNN and the big boys and girls, you know, separate into their own.
I like how you felt the need to make sure that
I don't want to be, you know, I want to be open.
Anyway, we're evolved. Let's go on.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say. So the big entities are separated and have their own. So they're weighed against their peers.
Well, that's good. It's you're not competing against the giant, which is good. You've been involved in ONA a while. You've been involved in the awards for a while. How do you see things? I mean, where do you see the progression going in our industry? What is it that sort of gets you excited about the work that's being done now and the possibilities for things being done in the future?
You know, I would actually say that what excites me about where we're at now is actually the same thing that excited me 10, 15, 20 years ago, which is that the opportunities for engaging, interesting, rich storytelling that reaches users in ways that they respond to, it's like this infinite space. And even as we move down the path, there's still the horizon is still an infinite distance away. And so, you know, years ago, I looked at it and thought, wow, this is great. I can read about my, you know, I grew up in Cleveland. I live in D.C. I can read about my Indians online. What an awesome thing this internet is. That's when the Indians were good for that very, very short time of my life. But then it became clear. It's like, wow, we can do this more interesting visual storytelling, and we can use animation. And so when I was working at Space News, we would create these animations that would show how the International Space Station was going to grow over the next 20 years, which is something that, like, how else could we have done that? We could have tried to do it through text, but would people really have understood? And here they can see it. We certainly couldn't, you know, shoot it with a camera. And so that was just an awesome thing that we would be able to do. And then the idea that, you know, we could start doing more with data and Flash and exposing that when I first went to USA Today in the mid-2000s. You know, that was incredibly exciting. And I think we're just continuing through that progression. So, you know, now we're doing, I think, just incredibly interesting ways of storytelling and merging and synthesizing different media and doing it on my mobile device so that on my iPhone, the other day I was making my daughter, you know, her lunch for school. And she was busy getting ready for lunch or to get ready to go to school. I was done doing what I need. And so I pulled up my phone and social media was pointing me to these stories. And I loaded that story about the should you rent or buy? And I was going through that on my phone. And I thought, this is a phenomenal way to tell this story. It's in the palm of my hand. And I can engage with this with my information and find out that, you know, should I do this or should I do that? That's what excites me. And it's a progression on that same continuum. And that's going to continue on to the future. And, you know, I don't know where it's going to go. I'm probably getting to the point in my career where I start being stodgy and it's going to take
out of my way, Grandpa.
Yeah, exactly. Where the, you know, it's going to take the 23-year-old who's going to be like, you know, you idiot. You can do this with, you know, whatever's coming next, wearables or whatever. But that's what I think is really cool.
Yeah. No.
And actually, to take this back to the OJAs, but we try and recognize that. Mm-hmm. And so we've tried to move away from identifying these specific media to saying who is the best at using these platforms. And so we've made it extra clear in our entries this year that mobile is something that judges are going to think about when they look at entries. How does this perform on mobile? And I'm sure, you know, over the next few years, it's going to continue to evolve in new and interesting ways, too.
It's funny. Not too long ago, and I'm sure it still happens in some newsrooms where people, the old stodgy journalists, look at things. Do I need to have a video on this? Do I need to have, you know, charts on this? What about good reporting? You know, blah, 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 blah. But the fact is that we're all just looking for new and different ways to tell stories to inform our readers. And the expectation from our readers is evolving as well. That they see some websites that are doing, you know, that bring them what you said, like bring them stuff in mobile on at their fingertips, and they come to expect that. So we need to sort of follow into that and to lead.
That's right. You do raise a good point. It's still in the service of the journalism and the storytelling. I definitely don't think, and judges recognize when an entry has something that's just tossed in there, right? But when it's adding to it, when it's additive,
the reader experience,
people really, really respond to it. So, you know, there was a recent piece on the rape allegations at Florida with the Florida, I think it was Florida State, or I can't remember which Florida it was, but the quarterback and the way that the police did not pursue that, and the story, they didn't just throw stuff in for the mere, you know, fun of it. They had documents in there that you didn't have to look at them if you didn't want to. But if you wanted to look at the actual police report, you could see that. And so it gave it transparency. It gave it the authority. It was providing the source material and saying, look, here's the actual thing. That to me is absolutely an affirmative response to the old stodgy reporter. You know, I have to do this, I have to do that. It's like, well, actually, this is actually really, really good journalism here. We're giving you the source stuff. We're showing our notes in a pretty positive way.
Yeah, and engaging your reader and informing your reader in new ways. And like I said, they come to expect a certain degree of creativity. I mean, the whole reader experience is all over the place at the moment. I mean, you get people who want to read stuff that's just a couple of tweets or to get their news, and other people who do want to read long form and do want to have a big audio visual experience when they go to a particular site. So, I mean, there's just lots of different ways you can innovate, lots of different areas.
Yeah.
So, you know, recognizing that is good for journalism. It's good for the reader experience because it sort of drives us to be innovative and to think about how we can tell our stories in ways that engages and informs our readers. So good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And just as often it is the small places that are pushing the boundaries in the most exciting ways. Last year, Access Philly won an OJA for the work they did on how much houses are being appraised at by the city. It was a phenomenal package, and it absolutely deserved to win, and it did win. And it's something that's like others could look at and say, "Wow, that is we gotta do something like that." So as we know, sometimes the bigger newsrooms and the old legacy places, are the ones that actually struggle the most at being innovative and moving the chains. And sometimes it's those really small, scrappy startups. Homicide Watch is another example that say, look, there's a whole new way you could be approaching this.
Yeah, and that's a great example because I interviewed Laura D'Amico, and it's just doing old style crime reporting, but in a digital realm, and you know, following the breaking news, following it through the courts, engaging the community through boards and comments and things. I mean, it's just a real rich way of covering old style news, which is exciting.
As I've said, it is the Online Journalism Awards, and the online part is it's not simply on the platform, but it's of the platform.
Yes, exactly. Well, I'm going to, before we wrap up, I'm going to take a sidebar here. A humanizing element for Joshua Hatch. You did something that I think was astounding, and it just sounded like incredibly fun. Could you tell me could you share how your daughter celebrated her birthday?
I had no idea where you were taking this.
Yeah.
But I appreciate the fact that I need humanizing.
come on, Tin Man. You have a heart. I thought this was really cool that you did this on Facebook. I wanted to share it because I thought it was really cool.
Oh, well, that's okay. So my daughter just turned 11 in April, and we had an amazing race party for her. If you know the show, The Amazing Race, she and I usually watch that together and enjoy it quite a bit. And so we put together an Amazing Race birthday party for her. And she had, I think we had... I'm going to say five teams. I think there were five teams of two, and I made, you know, a little cart, you know, the envelopes that you could tear. They had Amazing Race, and they had all the cards, and then they had all the activities they had to do.
And they had to run around the neighborhood.
They had to run around the neighborhood.
Bug the neighbors for
They had to run around. They had to complete tasks, and being the digital journalist that I aspire to, took lots of photos and some video, and then I wrote it all up and put it on my blog, which is at hatchomatic.com.
And it's a sickness, folks. Really?
Yeah, it is.
Digital journalism, not The Amazing Race, but
and it was actually a lot of fun. My my daughter actually came in last. It wasn't rigged in any way, which I think she was maybe
a little. Honey, you can't win because people are going to think that
she was a little. I think she felt a little bit like, Dad, it's my birthday. But it took a couple hours to run through. It took a lot longer to put together, and it was super fun. Two quick examples, and people can go and look if they want. And sort of document all the different steps. But the two of them that I really liked were, one was I got a bunch of little Lego kits, of like little vehicles, and I got two of each. And so I think there were like four or five, pairs of kits. And so I would take one and I would make it. Make the helicopter, and I would follow the instructions. And then the other kit, I would take all the pieces. I'd throw the instructions away and put all the pieces in a bowl. And so the kids had to look at the finished product and then use the pieces to replicate it. And once they got it exactly right, then they could go on and get their next clue. And so that was fun and pretty tough, especially because some of them had some internal construction that they couldn't see. But I think the one that was the most fun, and there's video of this, are the kids trying to memorize a Shel Silverstein poem and recite it. The poem is spaghetti, spaghetti all over the place. And so if you want to, you can watch the video online. But it was pretty funny to watch them try and get through this poem. And of course, they all did eventually, but it wasn't easy.
It wasn't like an Amazing Race that like 10 hours later you show up and says, well, the race is finished.
Nobody. Yeah, the one thing I'll say is nobody was eliminated from the race. Everybody got little chocolate. Well, not little. Some got pretty big chocolate bunnies at the end. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, no.
So I hope she enjoyed it.
No, and I experienced that through your your online posting. It is a bit of a sickness. Once you get into this field, you start, you know, I've joked about this a few times. I take pictures of my food and it's both embarrassing, but it's also strangely satisfying. And I still have to work through this, to sort of separate my life from the digital realm. But anyway, so let's wrap this up with a big, where can people find out more about the awards? How can they find out more about the conference?
Yeah.
And repeat the deadline.
Okay. So You can find out everything about the awards at awards.journalist.org. There's awards for students, for professionals. We absolutely encourage international, non-English entries, you know, big, small, medium, everything in between. So there's something there for everybody, and really want people to enter. If you're a member of ONA, the entry fee is $100. It's a bit more if you're not a member, but become a member and get all the benefits of that, support the organization, and enter. Awards.journalist.org. The deadline is June 13th.
It's 11:59.
11:59, June 13th.
Eastern.
That's right, Eastern time. So don't delay. Enter now. We really want your entries. You should do it.
Okay.
Awards ceremony is at the conference. The conference runs from September 25th through the 27th. It's in Chicago. You can register for the conference now. You can get the early bird rate. I don't remember how much it is, but if you're a member and you do it now, it gets more expensive if you wait.
Yeah.
The ceremony is, and it sells out too. In fact, I think in the last 2 years, it's even sold out before the rate has gone up. So if you want to go, definitely get your ticket now. The awards banquet is the Saturday night, the closing ceremony. It's a lot of fun. It really is a good time, and it's a chance to, you know, just kind of hang out with your colleagues, your industry colleagues. And I think did I miss anything?
No, I think we have informed, maybe not in the most direct way, but but we summed it up and we'll come to the end. Thanks for coming in, Josh. Thanks for the ongoing support for the podcast. We really appreciate working with you, talking to you, and having you in.
Well, thanks, Mike. I love you guys' podcast. I think it's great. I listen to it religiously and really enjoy it.
Thanks. Religiously. That's how we want it. We want you to.
Every Sunday morning.
As we get on our digital pulpit here. Thanks again for coming in.
You've been listening to It's All Journalism, a weekly podcast about the changing state of digital news. Find more info on us and download other episodes at itsalljournalism.com. This podcast is produced in partnership with the Association of Alternative News Media. Thanks for listening.